Hi, I'm Sarah. I'm a mom of three kids, ages 2, 5, and 7, and I live in Southern California.
And I'm Megan. I am the mom of 5 kids, ages 6 through 17, and I live in Michigan. This is the Mom Hour, part of the Life Listened Network. Hey, everyone, and welcome to another special bonus episode of the Mom Hour. In these episodes, Sarah and I take turns interviewing interesting people instead of talking to each other, so it's a little bit different than our usual Tuesday episode, but still a lot of fun. If you've ever moved, or if, like me, you've moved a lot, especially if you've moved with kids, you've probably struggled with how to really feel settled in a new place and make it your home. Today, my guest is Melody Warnick. She's author of the new book, This Is Where You Belong, The Art and Science of Loving the Place You Live. And Melody and I have a great conversation about how to really become attached and rooted in your community, whether you just moved there, whether you've lived there for a while, maybe are feeling a little bit ambivalent about the place you live, or have just decided you're ready to settle and love the community that you call home. It's a great interview, and I know you're going to enjoy it. Hey, Melody, thanks for being on the show.
Thanks so much for having me, Megan.
So I want to back up to before, you know, the concept for this book came about, before you even had the idea. And just to let listeners know, I've known Melody, gosh, how long have we known each other online? Like 10 years?
Right. You were actually the one who helped me get my first big break with a national magazine.
I did that?
You did. I'm sure you didn't even know, but we were on the same website, Freelance Success, and you were talking about writing for parenting. And I was like, if I could write for parenting, my life would be complete and I would die happy.
I remember feeling that same way before I wrote for parenting.
Right. And so I think I emailed you and asked for some advice, and you gave me the name of your editor, Sarah Smith. And you told me like that you had pitched her 10 times and finally she said yes. And I'm like, okay, I'm going to do what Megan did. And it worked. And Sarah gave me my first assignment, and that started my career. So,
and then your life was complete. And
yes.
That didn't happen for me either. I also had the same feeling, but it was a very nice place to write for. And, you know, it was definitely a big, stepping stone. So I'm glad that I had some part in that for you.
Yes, yay. You totally did.
Well, great. Okay. So as we've known each other for all these years, we know that we've both moved a lot.
Yes.
You have moved how many times?
So this is my 6th move in my 5th state.
Okay.
So not as many as some people, but it felt like a lot for me. You know, having grown up in the same house in Southern California, never moved once. And then as an adult, it felt like every few years we were moving.
Yeah. Okay. So, and your moves were big moves. They were like,
right.
You know, from, and they were, you know, well, tell listeners where you moved those, where those different states were.
Okay. So
geographically diverse.
Right. I went to college in Utah at BYU. My husband and I got married there. And when we graduated, we moved to Maryland. And then we moved back to Utah for a couple of years. And then we moved to Iowa for grad school. And then we moved to Austin, Texas. And then we moved to Blacksburg, Virginia, which is where we are now. So they all had, you know, they all had a good reason. There was, you know, a job or school, you know, mostly jobs, but they were all fairly epic moves across the country. Moving was something that was never very far from my thoughts. You know, why do we move so much? What makes people not want to move and want to actually stay in the place they are?
Okay. So you grew up, you know, you grew up more settled, I suppose, you know, more rooted in a community, it sounds like.
Yeah.
And then as an adult started kind of moving around.
Yes.
So did that feel natural for you? Like, did you get to a place and immediately start getting itchy feet? Or was it more that the circumstances kept you moving so that you had a hard time settling?
It was a little bit of both. I think I don't know that I expected when we started this process that we were going to move as much as we did. But our first move was to Silver Spring, Maryland. My husband got a job on Capitol Hill working for a senator. And I think I went into it thinking, okay, we're here for the long haul. And various things conspired to make us feel like this probably isn't the long-term place for us. You know, my husband's job required him to work super long hours, and we were really far away from extended family. And I think I thought, well, moving back west where we're a little closer to family will solve a lot of these problems. You know, we had bought this fixer-upper house. We were totally in over our heads. So part of it was just like, we just have to get out of this situation, and moving will do that for us. Moving will solve these problems. It's an idea that I talk about in the book, which is the sense of the geographic cure, that a lot of us feel like if we move, we can just start over. We'll have a clean slate and everything in life will be better. You know, all the problems that have arisen, you know, the friendships that maybe aren't going so well, or the problems with your house, or, you know, projects that you've bailed on and you feel guilty about. You can just leave all that behind when you move. And there's something incredibly appealing about that. So I found that both my husband and I were doing that. You know, we'd settle in a place for a few years, feel like we were going to commit. And then when things weren't quite working out the way we wanted to, we'd just be like, okay, it's time to move on. You know, let's try someplace new. And we'd move again. And that place wouldn't be perfect. Or, you know, maybe we weren't making friends as fast as we wanted to, or, you know, the job wasn't great. So how did we solve it? We moved again. So yeah. That kind of was just our mode of living for a while, that just, we just kept moving.
So here you are in Virginia.
Yeah.
And you decide it's time for you to make an effort to make Blacksburg the one? Is that kind of what happened?
Yeah. Well, I think what really started it was mom guilt, because yeah. I have two kids. At the time we moved, my older daughter, Ella, was about to start fifth grade. My younger daughter, Ruby, was about to start kindergarten. And Ella in particular had sort of been victimized by all these moves. This would be her third elementary school in three states. She had, you know, started elementary school in Iowa and then did a couple of years in Austin. And now she was starting over again in Blacksburg. And I felt really terrible, because it's, you know, it can be really hard for kids to feel settled in the place where they live. And I remember when we moved to Austin, you know, we felt like we were really uprooting Ella. She had some really good friends in Iowa. And I was really anxious for her to start making friends in Austin. And she went to school on that first day of third grade, and she came home and I said, how did it go? You know, did everything go well? Did you talk to anyone? And she looked at me with this, you know, happy face and said, I almost made a friend. Like, like that was
like peak that for her.
Right. Like she was pretty satisfied with that. Like, you know, some kid sat next to her and talked like briefly and then moved on. And she was like, okay, that was
her good. Standards were pretty low.
Exactly. Yeah. But it totally, you know, as a parent, you're just like sobbing into your pillow at night. Like, what have I done to my child? So I really felt that I owed it to my kids to try and give them a little more stability. You know, as a child growing up, I had friends move, and I always felt really grateful that that wasn't me. You know, I was kind of a shy kid, and I recognized that if my parents had decided to uproot us and move somewhere else, it would have been really difficult, I think, you know, just because I was such a loser at making friends, and I was always really thankful that I didn't have to. My husband had a totally different story, where his family moved every couple of years. And people always say, were you an army brat or something? And he wasn't. It's just his dad, you know, for various reasons with jobs and things like that, they moved around, and they were usually pretty long distance moves, you know, from Colorado to Utah to Oklahoma to New Orleans and things like that. It's all the kids in the family, you know, they're all normal adults, but I think they, you know, look back on that kind of childhood as sort of a trial that their parents put them through. You know, my husband moved to a new school when he was starting ninth grade, and it was just like the worst, you know, the worst time to move. And just when he was making friends, his parents moved him again at the start of 11th grade.
Oh, that's hard.
Yeah, totally hard. So I think I felt this obligation to try to not do that to my kids if I could help it. I don't know. Do you feel like that when you move? Like, I am messing my children up.
Well, you know, I'm thinking about that. Like, I moved twice as a kid. And it was hard, but it wasn't like, I was definitely rooted in the place. Like, I have really solid memories of the place that I went to elementary school, and that was like one complete package, right? I didn't move during elementary school, so that's like one whole chunk that I can kind of hang on to. And then I moved twice, pretty rapid succession, in eighth grade, and then again before 10th grade. And those were actually good moves for me. There was just I wasn't really loving the school that I was at in either case. And then the one I ended up in at the end was actually the best place I wound up. So actually, in some ways, I felt like for me that was good, but I wouldn't have wanted to do it more than I did. It's interesting for my kids because I was just trying to do the mental math. 19 years ago, John and I got married. And in those 19 years, I kind of have lost count, but I think we lived in like 10 cities.
Oh, wow.
But we haven't moved now in 9 years. So all those moves were concentrated into the first like 8 years of our kids' lives.
Wow.
And at the time, you know, the time, it didn't really, I don't know. I'm kind of mixed on it because I can see the positives. I think it really brought us together. Like when you move to someplace together, it really brings your little family together because you have to all figure it out together. There's not a lot of distractions, right? You have to kind of like buckle down and figure this new place out, and you don't have any friends. It's like everyone's kind of in it together. But I will say, now looking back over the 9 years, so Clara has never lived any place but St. Joseph, Michigan, which is where we live. Owen and William have never gone to school anyplace else. And it's different for them. They've had the same friends since kindergarten. There's a sense of comfort in our town that they have like ownership of it that I don't feel like the other kids ever got to have of any of the other towns. So I can, you know, now that we've stayed put, and I will also say staying put this time, because it is my tendency to move. Staying put this time around was really a product of laziness. And like, just, I finally got to the place where I was like, I don't think I can move with five kids. Like, I just, I don't think I can do it. I used to get really excited about the idea of moving. It was like, oh, what about this new place I've never been in, or I've never lived in, and I could discover it, and it's going to be better. Like, it's going to be better than the place we're in now. And I think I just got tired. And I also think that after being in that many cities, I realized, like, there are great things about every place, and there are not so great about things about every place. And you usually don't discover the not so great stuff till you've lived there a while. So there's always that sort of sense of disillusionment, you know, it's like, it's going to come no matter where you go. That fantasy of the perfect place doesn't really exist.
Right. That's absolutely true. And I think the more you move, the more you realize how true that is, that you know, there is no perfect place, and it takes a while to feel like, this is home, you know, this is where I want to be. And so I think that's where I was when we moved to Blacksburg, like coming here with super high hopes. I'd done all this research, you know, beforehand, Googled the crap out of it, and really thought, well, this is going to be amazing. You know, it's a smaller town. We're going to know everyone. And, you know, we're going to start over. We're going to get involved with everything. You know, we're just going to be better people when we move to Blacksburg. And then moving here and realizing right away that there were things about it that weren't so great, you know, like it rained a lot and the library was smaller than our old library. Just dumb things, but things that, you know, made me feel like, oh, this wasn't what I thought. And so, you know, in that moment of disillusionment, you have two choices. You can either start plotting your next move and say, okay, we made a bad decision and we're going to move on. Or you can say, I need to figure out how to make it work here. And I think if, you know, if I hadn't moved so much, I think like you, I had just gotten to the point where I was just sick of moving. You know, it takes a huge toll. It's so stressful and it's exhausting. And I just wanted to not have to do that again for a little while. And then, you know, having this sense that I needed to stay someplace so my kids wouldn't need many years of therapy as adults. So,
yeah. So, okay. So here you are, you've decided it's time to settle in and root yourself somewhere. And your book kind of makes the argument that there are things, it's not about, you know, it's not just about the place being the place for you. It's all about the things, also about the things that you can do to create, is it called place attachment? Is that the term that you use?
Yeah. Okay. Place attachment is this term, I didn't make it up. It was in the scientific literature about this, sociologists use it and environmental psychologists and people who want to describe that feeling that people have of being at home in a place, of being in kind of in love with it or wanting to stay there. And I wanted to know how that developed. You know, what makes people feel that way in their town? What makes them want to stay? And luckily, there was a lot of advice in, you know, the research that I was reading that showed, if not causation, then at least in my mind, correlation between certain behaviors and the development of this feeling of place attachment. It kind of came to me as this idea of, if you want to love your town, you should act like people who love their town act. So, for instance, there's a lot of research about people who develop good social relationships with their neighbors tend to be happier where they live. So that became one of my focuses, trying to get to know my neighbors a little better. People who volunteer feel better about their towns. People who, you know, eat local food and things like that. But like you said, there's also an element of when you love your town, you do what's good for it. So the things that I was interested in were things that would make me feel better about my town, but also things that would help my town, that would make my town do better. So one of those things is buying local. There's a lot of research that shows that when we shop at local independent stores, as opposed to, you know, Target and Amazon and Best Buy, that far more money continues to circulate in the local economy. And, you know, that's good for everyone who lives in the community. It's good for local government, who can use some of those tax dollars to, you know, build parks and pave roads and things like that. So I was terrible about this. I have always been a huge Target and Amazon fan. You know, when I move to a new town, what do? I stake out where the local Target is and I go there. And, you know, that is how I, you know, buy all the crap that I need for my house.
Well, and it's also comfortable. You know, when you've moved a lot, a place like Target is that recognizable beacon that makes you feel rooted, even though it's totally generic.
Well, totally. And I mean, that's kind of like one of the reasons for this rise in chain stores and chain restaurants is because we are kind of a mobile people as Americans. We're restless and we move around a lot. We also travel a lot. And when you go to a town that's completely unfamiliar, but you see that one thing like the Home Depot or whatever, or Applebee's, that you're like, I know that place. Like,
I'm in my neighborhood. That's Applebee's.
Right. Welcome to the neighborhood or something like that.
And it looks just like the neighborhood 100 miles away.
I found my home. You can go in and everything's exactly the same. Target is 100% like that. You go to one Target and you pretty much know what the Target in the other town is going to look like. And so you're right. That is a total comfort thing when you're new in a place, that you can walk into Target, you know how to navigate it more or less, you know what kinds of things you're going to find and how much they're going to cost. And that's really comforting. And so I'm not totally advocating that people abandon Target.
No, we would never do that.
The thing is, you can make a big difference by buying a few things locally. It doesn't mean changing your life entirely. So for me, I made a commitment that when we bought birthday presents for, you know, birthday parties that my kids were invited to, we would buy them from the toy store on the corner instead of Amazon or Target. So it's just kind of this one thing that we have committed to do. And probably over the course of a year, that's maybe $100. But it's something we do to support this local business that is a great asset in the town. You know, I don't want that business to go away. And so I have to make a point of shopping there.
That's so funny because we have the same household policy.
Really?
I mean, first of all, it's actually also just a lot easier to shop at the local store. I mean, where we live, we're a little closer to downtown than we are to Target. It's easier to get in and out, and they do the gift wrapping.
Yes, the gift wrapping is so big.
And honestly, that is valuable. I mean, if you think about it, if every time you go to buy your kids' friend who just invited them to this birthday party, you forgot all about a gift at Target, and you spend $5 less, but then you have to go buy a gift bag, and it's $4, and then some tissue paper. You know, the part that you don't use, you'll never find again.
Right.
You know, it's got a lot of value to it. So that's our approach too.
Yeah. So it's like, you know, you don't have to do it for everything. And there are some things you probably can't find in your town, but I advocate being thoughtful about it, thinking about what's available to me locally. Maybe it's, you know, framing or developing film or getting my vacuum fixed or whatever it is. Just take a second to think about where can I do this in my town in a way that supports local businesses and helps the community as a whole.
So I feel like I read something in your book about there being some research that you actually don't have to spend a lot to make a difference. Like that if everybody in a town spent X amount per year, that would keep businesses afloat. Am I remember this correctly?
Right. There was a study in Salt Lake that found if people spent just 10% more of their budget on local businesses, that the local economy would have something like $100 million more. And that will vary from community to community. But they're not saying add on to your budget. They're just saying shift some of your budget to local businesses. A good rule of thumb that I've seen is something called the 350 plan. And the idea is you spend $50 a month at three local businesses. Mm. And that's, you know, that's doable, especially when you include restaurants. So instead of shopping at a chain, you just shift a little of your spending to local independent businesses. And the more you do that and get to know the people who run them and see some of those benefits like gift wrapping that you don't get at the chains, the easier it becomes, the more you want to do that.
Another thing is, you know, that doesn't just apply to businesses, but like, here's a great example of something that I didn't do when we first moved to this town for, the first like 6 years. I'm a huge live theater fan, and I would wait until I was like in New York City and go see a Broadway show, or in Chicago and go see a show there. And I never went to our local theater. And we have like a small community theater that I'm now very involved with, but this was before that. But we also have, just in the next little city over, a main stage where touring shows come through. And I never went there. It's not even like I didn't want to. It was just that when I wasn't in that mode, because I wasn't traveling or, you know, I never really thought about it, and I never bought the tickets.
Right.
And if you don't support that stuff, it goes away.
Yeah. It's kind of like that staycation concept that, you know, when we're on vacation, we tend to spend money on things like, you know, museums and water parks and restaurants. But we don't necessarily do that in our hometown, and we let these things just go by. We had lived here for several years. And when I started working on the book research, one of the things that came up is you need to do fun things in your town. Like it's actually important to feel like your town has stuff for you to do. And, you know, depending on where you live, if you live in a big city, that's a no-brainer. But if you live in a smaller town like I do and like you do, it can take some doing to think of, you know, what is my town great at? What can we do for fun in the middle of winter? And there is a historic plantation that is in my town called Smithfield Plantation, you know, one of the early settlements in Blacksburg. And I'd never gone there just because I thought, field trip, you know, like, this is the place you have to go when you're in fourth grade, but, you know, they're not going to get me there. But when I started kind of forcing myself to do the things that were available in my town, that's one of the things I did. I went to Smithville Plantation with my family, and it was super interesting. So it wasn't necessarily something that I would have, you know, chosen to do, but I did it because it's in my town and I want these things to survive.
Yes.
And, you know, and I think it's the same with any entertainment offerings, local theater or music or dance or anything like that. Sometimes, you know, we get to the weekend and we just want to like sit around and we don't want to do anything. But, you know, to some extent,
the things that make your town worth living in are the things that you have to support, you know?
Right, yeah. Exactly. You have to, you know, make an effort to buy the season tickets if you can afford them. And if you can't, go to a show once in a while, get a babysitter or take your kids. And it's rewarding for you to remember, oh, there's awesome stuff like this where I live.
Now, Melody, tell me if you have also been guilty of this. And this is something for me. I've always thought of myself as fairly nomadic because I did have a fairly nomadic upbringing, even though it was later, you know, later in my teen years. But I am the kind of person, I go to a town and I fall in love with it. Every town I go to, I'm like, it doesn't really matter. I tell you, it doesn't even matter how bad the town is. I use it, it's terrible to call any, you know, community bad. But like, I'll go to a place that really isn't for me. But I can always find something I love about it. And I'm always thinking, oh, what if I lived here? What would, and then I fantasize, what would my life look like? And would I be, even if the town is like a one, you know, stop sign town, I think, well, maybe I'd be like the farmer person. And, you know, like the, there's that fantasy element. But then you get into an actual town that has all this potential and you don't take advantage of it. So what is going on there?
Right. I think what is so captivating about seeing other towns, and for me, seeing real estate listings, yes. I'm obsessed with online real estate listings because there's something really interesting about clicking through someone else's house online and, you know, imagining yourself in that life.
Yeah, I know.
Right. What would it be like in that space and in that community, and everything would be different?
Yes.
You know, that is kind of the lure of moving around, that we can start over. We will sort of put on a new life in a way, you know, change everything really dramatically. But somehow when we actually are in the place, whether it's new or whether you've lived there for a while, inertia takes over and simply
life gets in the way.
Right. The dailiness of life, that you're, you know, you're taking your kids to school and you're carpooling and you're doing Taekwondo lessons and stuff like that. And things like thinking about your community and how to be a part of it and showing up for the farmer's market or the Friday night drum circle or whatever. Right. These things take a backseat to bedtime and homework and stuff like that. And, you know, that some of that is inevitable, that that's going to happen. But I found that for me, when I started looking at my community and my town as something that could offer me, you know, a better life, a more interesting life, and also something that I could give back to, it made my life richer. It felt like less like this is just the place I ended up and I, you know, I don't really know how and we're just kind of biding our time here, and more like I'm really in love with this place. You know, I want to know what's going on. I want to be part of things. And that's really exciting when you can get to that point.
It's kind of like anything else. The more you put into something, the more you get out of it. So whether that's a relationship or your hometown. You know.
Yeah, absolutely. And I've noticed that for me, as I've made these efforts, some of them small and some of them larger, they always have some sort of payoff. I write in the book about trying to organize a placemaking project. And, you know, placemaking is this idea that ordinary citizens can do things to make their towns more interesting, more livable. And I was, you know, had done research about this and was really captivated by it. And one day, my daughter, who I think was, you know, 12 at the time, was reminiscing about the sidewalk chalk festival that we had gone to in a town in Texas and saying, you know, I wish Blacksburg had something like that. I'm like, that's it. We are going to do the sidewalk chalk festival. We are going to organize this from scratch and it's going to be amazing. And, you know, most of the time we have ideas like that and we're kind of like, that's a good idea. Someone should do that. And we don't act on it. But I was really motivated by all that I had learned about placemaking. I'm like, we're going to do it. And so we, you know, got in touch with people in the community who could help us, started having meetings with people. And it was underway. Like, this was going to happen. It was real. And I think the realness of it, the fact that I had committed to organizing this big event, all of a sudden became super overwhelming. And I kind of panicked. It was like, all I could think of when I'd lie in bed at night was all the things that could go wrong with this. No one's going to show up. It's going to be too hot. It's going to rain. And so I sort of just backed out, not entirely, but I just spooled it back a lot and said, okay, you know, we're not going to do this big thing with professional artists. We're just going to like throw some chalk on the ground and kids can draw with it and it will be okay. And that's what we did. There was an art festival that was already set up in town and we just kind of had a booth there that kids could come and do sidewalk chalk. And it was fine. But at the time I felt kind of really disappointed in myself. Like, this is not what I had set out to do. I wanted to organize something amazing and this wasn't really amazing. But I kind of realized over time that even though this wasn't my ideal, I had gotten a lot of wonderful things out of it. I had met people that I wouldn't meet otherwise. And I felt like for just a small moment, for just one afternoon, I was part of making things happen in Blacksburg, in my town. And there's something really beautiful about that. So, you know, I think it does take engagement and getting involved, and that takes time. And especially when you have a family and you have children, that can be difficult. And I completely understand how people listening to this might be like, that is a pipe dream. I'm, you know, like I'm struggling to buy the groceries and we don't have time to do anything above and beyond. But, you know, simply finding small ways to appreciate what your community has to offer, to volunteer when you can, to meet people, those things pay off in quality of life and in the attachment we feel to our town and to our community and the sense of belonging we feel. And those are really valuable.
I agree. And, you know, you don't, you know, that was 1 year, but you really don't know what the ripple effects could be, how that might have inspired someone else. You know, it doesn't always, I think one of the things I've really noticed about, and this ties into a few themes in your book, and I'm just going to talk about myself for a few minutes because I can't help it. But you know, I've lived in a lot of towns. I've lived in big cities. I've lived in small towns. I've lived in medium-sized towns, but usually either for some reason, big cities or small towns. I'm not sure why. And there's been a lot of times, especially in small towns where I've thought, or even neighborhoods within big cities, because I was never living in the most posh neighborhood. I was never living in the neighborhood that was already what I wanted. I had to live in the one that wasn't there yet, right? So it was just a little boring in whatever way. And I would always think, if only this neighborhood or this town had X, then I would really feel like it was my place. But because I hadn't done the things that you also talk about in the book, which is to really get to know people and really invest yourself, I never had the opportunity to make those things happen. So I would think to myself, for example, like, oh, wouldn't it be great if I could be part of starting a live theater or something like that, or like a venue, some kind of thing, you know, bigger than myself that ties in with all of my interests. But I didn't even have a place to start because we don't have a huge budget for that. I don't have millions of dollars lying around to invest. So I would just think, well, that's it. I can't do it. But what I'm finding now is that it's not necessarily about you. It's about the people you know and like the little spark you can light up, right? So it's, you know, now all of a sudden because – and it's funny because the first like 6 years we lived in this town, I was like the phantom mom. Like no one – people had heard of me. I always joke with this. Like it was rumored that I existed, but no one ever saw me. I would be like the one – I did not want to deal with people. And it's funny because I'm an extrovert. But I only really wanted to be extroverted at that time around my people, which was this small circle of people that I had pre-selected, right? And my family, which is big. I have a big family, and that was enough for me at that. It was kind of like I needed simplicity. But just in the last couple of years, I've really started branching out, and I'm seeing all of a sudden all these opportunities are coming to me that I would never be able to just do on my own. But it's like that little seed gets planted. And people get to know you for being that person. So maybe you didn't do this amazing, you know, chalk festival, but maybe someone said, oh, well, we know Melody. She hosted that booth and, you know, now we're going to be the ones who are going to take this and run with it, but we want Melody involved, or there's going to be some, you know, I guess what I'm saying is even the small things count, and getting to know people is what makes that stuff spread.
Right.
And without that connection, it doesn't happen.
That's actually exactly what happened. I did that little Sidewalk Chalk festival 1 year and, you know, it was sort of underwhelming. And then just a few weeks ago, the same art festival event happened and a new group of people came and did Sidewalk Chalk again. And I wasn't even a part of it. You know, it was some of the same people who had done it the first year, but they just took it and ran with it. And that was totally okay. I think you're absolutely right that the more people we know, the more networked we are in our town and connected, the more opportunities come to us, all kinds of opportunities. And that was a hard lesson for me to learn because I'm a huge introvert and I just find it a little hard to get to know people that well. So I have a lot of acquaintances and like not quite as many really good friends. But so when we first moved here and I first started thinking about placemaking, I wanted to do this project that I had heard about that was from Raleigh called Walk Your City. A guy named Matt Tomasulo had decided that he wanted people to feel more motivated to walk in downtown Raleigh. And so he made these signs just like on his laptop and had them printed that would say, you know, it's only a 5-minute walk to the NC State Bell Tower, or it's a 10-minute walk to a great Thai restaurant or something like that. And the idea was people would read the signs and they would think of walking in terms less of distance than of time. It would feel more doable. And he just sort of did this like a ninja in the middle of the night, you know, didn't have any permission, just went with a few friends and put up these signs around downtown. And it became this thing, Walk Your City. And there's a website, Walk Your City, I think it's .org, where anyone can go and make these signs for their town and put them up. So I decided to do that for Blacksburg. And Matt, the guy who invented Walk Your City, said, you know, it's really smart to get some town buy-in on this, you know, like talk to some of the people on the city council or, you know, town manager, let them know what you're doing. And at the time, I didn't know any of those people. And it made me incredibly shy to think about trying to get permission for this. And so I just thought, no, I'm just doing it by myself. And I did, basically. I had a friend help me go around, like zip tie these things to posts downtown. And the signs went up. And then a few months later, they had kind of disintegrated. And, you know, I never really got like feedback on it. I just sort of felt like this weird, you know, ripple in the pond that just went away. And, you know, looking back on it, I think that could have been a lot more effective if I had actually involved other people and gotten some help with it. So I think, you know, it is intimidating sometimes, but the more you reach out and, you know, work with friends of friends and things like that, the more you can actually accomplish.
You know, one thing that is occurring to me when you're talking about this, and I have found, especially in, I mean, because I'm assuming anybody who's interested in your book or in this topic is not living in utopia.
Right.
They're living in a place that they are struggling to accept or embrace or really, you know, dig into. And there could be lots of reasons for that. But so assuming you're not living in the perfect city for you, because if you are, then you're probably just out enjoying yourself right now and you're not listening to this show. Assuming that, it's a lot easier than you might think to get to gain traction on stuff. Because if you're the kind of person who cares a lot about making the place where you live the right place for you, or even just finding the right place for you, you're already the person people want. Like, you're that person. The unfortunate part is then you might end up being that person who ends up like taking on a million volunteers. You know what I mean? Like the
like
thankless jobs.
Yeah.
Exactly. And if you don't want to do that, that may, you know, but I guess what I'm saying is I think there's a lot more opportunity than people even know is out there. And it's easier to break in than people might believe.
Right. I totally agree with that. Just a few weeks ago in my town, one of these friends that I've come to know here in Blacksburg, you know, she's the mom of one of my daughter's friends, that kind of thing, included me on a Facebook post about a new group that was starting to try and bring a refugee family to Blacksburg. And I was really excited about it and went to the meeting that they had at the library to talk about this. And the organizers were completely overwhelmed by the response. I think they thought like five people would show up and it turned out to be 100. You know, we were spilling out of this room in the library. And the thing that has been interesting about connecting with the organizers a little bit is like, these are not people who are experts in this. They've never done it before. It was just kind of like, they had a good idea and they were willing to act on it. And they gathered a group to help them. So it wasn't just one person going it alone. It was a few people who all had the same interest and they send the word out to their friends and their friends spread the word. And pretty soon, like, this thing is happening. And it's really awesome to see that kind of change happen in a town.
I know that your book delves into other things like getting, you know, more political. I'm assuming you mean local politics.
Yes. Like, there's a lot of studies.
Like county drain commissioner. Every time I pass like an election sign for that, I'm thinking, what does the county drain commissioner do?
I did not know that was a thing.
It is a around here. It is a thing.
Apparently in Michigan, it's a thing.
Yeah.
I think that's one of those things that a lot of us tell ourselves, oh gosh, I would never in a million years do that. There's a lot of studies that link how involved we are with things like, you know, voting and writing to our local elected officials with how place attached we feel, you know, how much we feel like we're at home in a place. And so I'd love to see more young mothers and people with young children running for local office, but it doesn't have to be that extreme. Stuff like, you know, showing up once in a while for a city council meeting.
Yeah, it's a city council. And there's often lots of like committees that you can be part of that don't take a lot of time.
When I lived in Iowa, I saw an ad in the newspaper for a board opening on the local library board. And, you know, I'd never done anything like that, but I'm like, I like libraries. Maybe I can do that. And, you know, filled out the application. And sure enough, I got on the board. And it was demanding. And these were years when I did have little kids. You know, my daughter was not even three when I started that. But it was also incredibly rewarding to feel like you've kind of peeled back the curtain on your town. On the way things run, you sort of see who's in charge and you have a voice in that process. And it's a heady feeling. You feel really powerful. Like, you know, some of the people in charge, you can make things happen. And I, you know, I wish more people took that opportunity to do that.
And another thing I think that is really nice for me as someone who, I've talked a lot about, and Sarah and I both have talked a lot on this show about how we are the ultimate mediators, the people who ride the middle, the people who don't, you know, don't want to take an extreme stance on anything. And the nice thing about local politics is it's blessedly removed usually from national politics.
Yes. Like,
it is not party line
heated.
Stuff. Right. Sure. But it gets heated like in a small room. With people you know, right? With people you really know. So it's not like going on Facebook and seeing, you know, the latest national convention coverage or whatever where it gets very ugly. It's not that. It's like you don't have to align yourself with a party. You're aligning yourself with, you know, whatever it is, like whatever. And some of them are party-based, but a lot of aren't.
Right. In my town, city council people don't run with any sort of party affiliation at all. So, which is kind of cool. It's a relief sort of to know that you can just run as a human being who cares about certain issues. And the truth is, you know, small town or, you know, medium-sized city issues can get heated, but they tend to be things that are a little more comprehensible. You can understand how they affect your life. And it's funny because I feel like local political decisions have so much more of an immediate impact on your life.
You can feel it. Yes.
You're right. Than the national ones.
And also it feels more real because I kind of feel like no matter who we elect in, you know, it all matters, but does it really matter? I mean, there's this whole machine we don't understand. It's so removed. We don't live there. It's a machine I don't understand. And if it's local, you can see it. You can, like you said, peek behind the curtain.
Right. Like, national politics is always at a remove. And so it's easy to, like, look at national politicians and be like, I hate your guts. You're right. The worst. Local politicians tend to be people that you know, people who are willing to, like, meet you for coffee. Yeah. I went to a city council meeting and the big issue was backyard chickens. And so, you know, whether we're going to allow backyard chickens in our town. And there were like 20 people there with signs dressed up as chickens. And like, that's the kind of politics I can get behind, you yes, know,
absolutely. Chicken politics. Exactly. It's an understandable issue. It yes. affects you. It affects your family. And if you don't come down on one side or the other, you're not going to like alienate, you know what I mean? You'll alienate people locally, maybe a small faction, but it's not going to be like you're taking the stand on this big national issue. I think for people who are feeling very awkward about politics right now or uncomfortable about that, I think local politics could be like the antidote for that.
Right. I 100% agree that, you know, national politics is, it gets ugly fast. Yeah. I think local politics are a little bit more warm and fuzzy. Definitely people disagree and, you know, get upset and stuff like that. But at the end of the day, you can remember that these are humans. These are your neighbors. Yes.
And you would have to see them at the store.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And, you know, you can feel like they are doing their best job for your town. Yeah. And yeah, it feels good.
Melody, I wanted, before we wrap up, and I know there's so much more great content in your book, and I really encourage people to buy This Is Where You Belong, and we will have a link to that in the show notes for this episode. But I want to talk to the people who are in a town and they're not sure if they're staying. And this is an issue that I've had many times where, for whatever reason, not because I don't even, maybe sometimes I love the place, I'm not sure we're going to be there forever because maybe my husband will get a job someplace else or, you know, for whatever reason we might leave. And there's that seesaw between investing or just holding up and waiting. You know what I mean?
Right.
Yeah. And I know you've been through this because you talk about it in the book.
Yeah. I completely understand that desire to just hole up and wait it out, especially when you're a community that maybe you're struggling with for a reason. Maybe you've lived there for a little bit and it doesn't feel like home and you think the best solution is just cut our losses and move away and try this again somewhere else. And I'm not at all against moving. Sometimes moving is the best solution for certain kinds of problems. But at the same time, I encourage people to embrace where they live for as long as they're there. We had friends when we were in grad school in Iowa who moved there and knew from the start that they were only going to be there for a year or less. You know, one of them had a sabbatical at the university and it was this really temporary situation. But for the time that they were there, they just threw themselves into activities and volunteering and friendships. And by the time they left, they were part of the community. People, you know, missed them. They had made a million friends. And I always admired that approach, you know, instead of just saying, well, it's just a year. Why should I bother? I'm just going to up my cable subscription and, you know, hang out on the couch.
And it's especially easy when you have little kids to do that, by the way.
Right, exactly.
You know, yeah.
But, you know, the opposite approach is to make this a year where you make positive experiences with your family and with your children. And, you know, depending on your personality, that may not mean amassing a huge collection of friends, but it may mean meeting a few people that your kids can play with and that you can have conversations with, or may mean finding your favorite spot where you always go every Saturday to have French toast, or, you know, finding the park that your kids love to play at. Like, even if you're only there for a month, I think you can explore a community and fall in love with it. You know, like we were talking about going on vacation and imagining yourself living in a place. Right. Well, this is sort of your chance. Like, even if it's not a long haul move, even if you know that it's a short term thing, you get to live that life for a little while. And, you know, why not live it up as much as you can?
And a month counts, 6 months count, a year counts. And, you know, one thing that I guess I wish I had really thought more clearly about, because I would get very black or white about this when, especially when my kids were young and I was like, where are we going to be? I always felt like I had to have this figured out, you know, like, yeah. What is the place I'm going to commit to? I almost felt like it had to be a thing, like almost like a belief for me, you know, the place we, does that make sense? Like,
no,
the place
yeah.
we're going to be is going to be like our place and that's what we're going to get behind. And I think I missed some opportunities then. Not only for myself, because living in a place for 3 months, like you said, that's 3 months of your life. That counts. But also 3 months of your child's very short life could be huge. I remember yeah. things from being a kid that were very short, like summers. It's funny, the summer, the town we live in now, my dad and my mom divorced when I was young, and my dad remarried a woman who lived here. So they lived in this same town, like about a half block from where we actually live right now.
Wow.
And so I spent 3 summers. 6 weeks each summer. So I spent a total of 18 weeks living in this town as a kid. And that made a huge impact on me. Like, I have so many memories from the town that I now live in. And I was 7, 8, and 9 years old. It was like my 7th summer, my 8th, and my 9th. So it's funny to look back and say, oh, that was such a, it was a blip. For an adult, that would be even more of a blip. But for me as a kid, it was huge. It was like a huge chunk of my life that I'll never forget. So we can't underestimate that.
Right. Even those little moments can have a huge impact and form these really strong, vivid memories. And, you know, I think the important thing for kids, especially when you're mobile and you're moving to a new town and maybe don't know how long you're going to stay there, is to let your kids know that this is an adventure, you know, that we are just going to explore and find things here that make us happy. You know, one thing that I've recommended is when you're moving to a new town, tell your kids that we're going to try every ice cream shop within a 20-mile radius, or, you know, every donut shop. And, you know, kids absorb from their parents an attitude toward the community. So if you're seeing it as opportunity, as a chance to experience something new, if only temporarily, your kids probably will too. They'll pick up on that fact that this isn't something scary and overwhelming. It's something to be enjoyed and appreciated.
Absolutely. Melody, this has been so great talking to you. This is I feel like this is a topic I could talk about for hours.
But right, me too.
It's obviously something, I think there's a reason we connected on this issue. And when you told me that you had this book deal, I was really excited because I feel like this is a book, you know, I wanted to see in the bookstore. So the book is This Is Where You Belong, The Art and Science of Loving the Place You Live. Melody Warnick has been our guest. Where can listeners find the book? I'm sure they can find it at their local bookstore, but is there a website that they can just go to?
I have a website that is just my name, melodywarnick.com, and you can find links to places to buy the book, plus a book club guide, plus extra information.
Well, book club, and that would actually be a great thing, you know? Like,
right. This is a topic I've discovered that, like, people love to talk yes. about it because everyone has their own story of moving around and falling in love with places. So, yeah, I think it's perfect for a book club.
Awesome. Okay. And we'll also put it in the show notes at themomhour.com. You can just search for Melody Warnick or This Is Where You Belong, or really if you're listening, you know, when the show comes out, it'll be up on top. So, all right, Melody, thanks so much for being my guest. This was great.
Thank you so much for having me, Megan. It was so fun.
Absolutely. I hope your book is very successful. I think it will be, because I think you're right. This is a topic people really, you know, they need it. You know, we're a mobile society. So, you know.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.